Good evening. Last week, I turned my television on to one of those murder investigation shows, and it started out, they were talking to a woman about her granddaughter. The little girl's name was Riley Ann Sawyers. The woman's son, his wife, and little Riley Ann lived with this woman until the baby was around 2 years old. As the couple was going through a divorce, the woman's son moved out, and the daughter-in-law and little Riley stayed there for a while. Then the ex-daughter-in-law met a man online, moved from Ohio to Galveston, Texas, and got married, taking little Riley with her. The grandmother and the father of Riley Ann never saw the little girl again. You see, the new stepfather believed that the girl was undisciplined. So one day, instead of going to work, he decided to stay home, and they were going to teach this little two-year-old some discipline. And so throughout the day, they spent the biggest part of the day beating the little two-year-old literally to death. Then they took her body and they put it in a plastic trunk and put it in the garage, where they left it for about 2 months, after which they took it and they dumped the box in Galveston Bay. It was later discovered by a fisherman, and an investigation began to try to discover the identity of this unknown child that the police called Baby Grace. One day, the grandmother was online and just happened to see a pop-up for a missing child, and it was a composite drawing of Baby Grace, and immediately she recognized the clothes that she had bought for her granddaughter. She called authorities and said, "I believe that Baby Grace is my granddaughter." Riley Ann Sawyer's DNA test confirmed. The evidence was accumulated, and the mother was picked up for questioning. At first, she denied everything, but after a few minutes, she started to break down and she started to confess of the brutal death of her daughter at the hands of her then husband and herself. The police arrest the stepfather, and the two are tried, convicted, and sentenced to life in prison. Later, the small island off of Galveston Bay where the little girl was found was officially renamed Riley's Island, and it is named that to this day. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 and 17 says, "These six things doth the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination unto him: a proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood." Is there any more innocent blood than that of a child? What do you think should happen to this couple? I seriously can't fathom how someone can kill an innocent child, but how the mother of this child could participate in this gruesome act is beyond me. I've spared you much of the details, but I brought this to light to give us an idea of how bad things can be. We hear stories like this and it makes us want to administer strict punishment, swift punishment. I use this story as an introduction to hopefully strike a nerve. If this story doesn't stir your emotions, you may be heartless. But why does it bother us to hear stories like this? Why does it make us angry to hear stories like this? If you could do something right now to prevent this from ever happening again, would you? Would you speak up for other victims before it's too late? You see, the killing of one's children didn't begin with Riley Ann Sawyers. It's been going on for a long, long time. Deuteronomy chapter 18, verses 10 verse 10, Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 10. If you look at this passage, it says, "There shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or that useth divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch." God was commanding the Israelites not to sacrifice their children. What that means to pass through the fire is that they were not to burn their children as a sacrifice to the pagan god Molech. Molech was a god of the Amorites. If you remember, God told the Israelites when they went into that land, do not adopt their practices. Do not marry into them. Do not let them marry into your families. Do not do anything with them. Run them out of the land. And they didn't run all the people out of the land. Instead, they became just like them. And they thought, that's pretty cool. I think we'll do that too. I like their practices. I think I'll adopt those practices. However, some of those practices were sacrificing their children to false gods. Listen to Jeremiah chapter 19, verses 3 through 5. Jeremiah chapter 19, verses 3 through 5. It says, "And say, hear ye the word of the Lord, O kings of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel. Behold, I will bring evil upon this place, the which whosoever heareth his ears shall tingle, because they have forsaken me, and have estranged this place, and have burned incense in it unto their other gods, whom neither they nor their fathers have known, nor the kings of Judah, and have filled this place with the blood of innocents. They have built also the high places of Baal to burn their sons with fire for burnt offerings unto Baal, which I commanded not, nor spake of it. Neither came it into my mind." Is there a difference between what's going on here and what happened to little Riley Sawyers? Well, in a sense, for one, one is a group of people that long time ago, they killed their children to offer them up and sacrifice them to false gods. The other, a little girl, was the victim of her mom and her dad's rage, stepdad's rage. In either case, a flagrant disregard for the lives of the innocent is portrayed. Mark chapter 10, verses 13 and 14. Mark chapter 10, verses 13 and 14. Jesus is teaching, and it says, "And they brought unto him young children, that he should touch them. And his disciples rebuked those that brought them. But when Jesus saw it, he was much displeased, and said unto them, Suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for of such is the kingdom of God. Verily I say unto you, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child, he shall not enter therein. And he took them up in his arms and put his hands on them and blessed them." What did these people do that displeased the Lord so? Well, from what I can tell, they rebuked the people who brought their children to see Jesus, thus preventing them from being able to get to him. Don't stop the children from coming to me. That made Jesus very displeased. All they did was stop the children from coming. He don't have time for you. Get these children out of here. You ever see somebody that just treats children like they're nothing? They're nobody. You're just a kid. You be quiet. We're adults here. Get away. And Jesus was displeased that they forbid those children to come to him. It says that he was much displeased. How displeased do you suppose Jesus is with child abusers and pedophiles today? Or what about the leaders of our nation who want to make those things legal? The deadliest silence in the United States is the silence of Christians while 4,000 of the most innocent people God created in His image are being butchered daily in the abortion clinics across these United States. That's 1.5 million babies murdered a year and discarded like garbage. Didn't we just read that God hates hands that shed innocent blood? Look at Ezekiel chapter 3 and verse 18. Ezekiel chapter 3 and verse 18. Here it says, "When I say unto the wicked, thou shalt surely die, and thou givest him not warning, nor speakest to warn the wicked from his wicked way to save his life, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at your hands. Are our hands covered with blood because of our silence while millions are being murdered? Have we become guilty of a greater condemnation because we've done nothing to stop the slaughter? I don't know anybody that approves of it. Not one single person that approves of it. And if they do, they've been awful silent and they haven't spoke up in front of me. Y'all remember the first murder in the Bible? Sure, it was when the sons of Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, brought their offerings and made an offering to God. Cain offered up from his garden the things that he had grown, and Abel offered up the fat of his sheep. God accepted Abel's offering, but it says in Genesis chapter 4 and verse 5, "But unto Cain and his offering he had not respect, and Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell." You see what God told him later on? He says, if you'd have done good, everything would be fine. This tells us that God had already told them what to offer. Cain, however, was angry that his offering was rejected. He offered something that God hadn't told him to offer, and then he was angry because God rejected his offering. So he turned on his brother, and he killed him. Genesis chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. Genesis chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. And Cain talked with Abel, his brother. Look at that. Two brothers. And Cain talked with Abel, his brother. And it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him. And the Lord said unto Cain, where is Abel, thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, what hast thou done? And listen to this. The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. The voice of thy brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. I know what you've done. In 1973, a lawsuit was filed and taken to the Supreme Court. Roe versus Wade. The Supreme Court ruled that in the United States, the United States Constitution protects a woman's right to have an abortion without government interference or with minimal government interference. Since then, 4,000 babies murdered a day adds up to nearly 1.5 million or 68,620,000 since 1973. And that's rounding the numbers down. Now, if Abel's blood cried out to God because of his unjust murder, how do you think that 68 million babies sounds to God right now as their blood cries out and we turn a blind eye? In the Roe versus Wade case, pro-life and pro-choice were at stake. One was the right to live, the other was the right to choose. It's interesting that the main argument was that a woman has a right to choose whether or not she keeps or aborts her baby. In one case, she chooses to keep her baby alive, and in the other case, she chooses to take away the baby's choice from before they ever have a chance. What does the Bible have to say about this? We know that God gave us free will. If you will remember, Adam and Eve could eat from any tree of the garden except for one. That would give them the opportunity to choose right from wrong. People wonder sometimes, why was that tree put there? Why did God put the tree there? He knew they were going to do wrong. He knew what they were going to do. He put that there so that they would have the choice. It was their own choice and not His. In fact, they even tried to blame God. Oh, the woman you gave me, she gave it to me. The snake beguiled me. But Adam said, the woman that you gave me, she's the one that made me do it. You would never gave her to me. That's what he inferred. Certainly God expected them to do right. Therefore, he told them what was right and what was wrong and told them what choice to make and allowed them to make their own choice. Genesis chapter 3 and verse 6, we see what choice was made. When the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave also unto her husband, and he did eat. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 19 and 20. In Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 19 and 20, God gave the Israelites a choice to make before entering into the promised land. You're going into the promised land. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 19 and 20. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him, for he is thy life, and the length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. Choose ye this day. Choose life. I have given before you life and death. Choose life. And how many choose death? The book of Exodus, if you remember, Joseph rose up to prominence in the land of Egypt, and he delivered the Hebrew people from certain extinction. There was a famine in the land, and they had no food, and people were just dying off. The Hebrew people were highly revered in the land of Egypt because of what Joseph had done. Joseph formulated a plan to save the Egyptians, to save all of the nation from the famine. His plan was implemented and was a phenomenal success. And so for the next 400 years, Joseph's family were highly revered. But over time, there rose up a Pharaoh that just had forgotten about those things. That's ancient history. Who are these people? He feared that the Hebrew people might rise up against them because they were overpopulating. They're more than we are. Their numbers are greater than ours. And if you think back to when they first came in, there was around 70-something people, the Hebrew people, Abraham's family. There wasn't a whole lot of them. Now they outnumber the Egyptians. So this Pharaoh, he started working them harder and harder, started increasing their workload, thinking that this increased workload would stagnate their population. They'll be working too hard to think about having more kids. However, it only made them flourish more. So he decided to kill all the males being born. Exodus chapter 1 and verse 22. Exodus chapter 1 and verse 22. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. He had already implemented a plan, or he already tried to wipe them out by having the midwives kill the babies, but the midwives couldn't do it. Their job was to bring life into the world, not to take it. And so they made up a story, and they said, hey, the Hebrew women are too strong. It's not like they're passed out and we can just take their kids and throw them in the river. They're strong. They're giving birth before we even show up. And so Pharaoh says this, every son that is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. My, how far we've come. These people would have large families. Remember, Jacob had 12 sons. We don't know how many daughters he had, but he had a large family. The Hebrews of Exodus were the same way. In fact, that was part of what Pharaoh's problem was. They were overpopulating. We can't have that. He was concerned. He was concerned that they were overpopulating. They were having too many children. They were multiplying too rapidly. But they had no intention of killing their children. That was Pharaoh's idea. Pharaoh's idea was to stagnate the population. Perhaps the powers that be of our day have established places like Planned Parenthood for the same reason. Now looking at our own culture, it's difficult to understand that women literally protest for their right to kill their own children. What kind of land do we live in? We stand and wonder what the world is going through. We wonder what's going on in these people's heads when they stand up and say, my body, my choice. My body, my choice. That little baby's body is not your body. Not to mention that there are millions of families that want to adopt children, but are the process is made so difficult that they can't do it, or it just takes too long or costs too much. Scary thought. What have we become that we let such atrocities as abortion continue in our country? Perhaps we are like the people of Isaiah's day. Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 2. Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 2. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord hath spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. The people have rebelled against God. Perhaps that is what is going on. The farther we take God from everything in our lives, the worse things get. Take God out of the schools, that's not good. Take God out of the homes, that's not good. Take the children out of the homes, keep them at school long, long hours. Get them away from their parents so their parents can't teach them about God. And a lot of people teach their children about God by bringing them in here, putting them in that room for 20 minutes every Sunday, and then moving them to the next one, and the next one, and the next one, moving them on up, and they graduate from high school, they go to college, and they hear some philosopher or some college professor start talking about, this is all the things you've been taught were wrong. And their foundation is so weak that they say, you know what, that sounds right. God, who is God that I should obey Him? And they leave God. We're failing our children because we're failing to teach them about God and what God expects from us as His creation. A sinful nation is a rebellious nation. It may be convenient to look at the blatant sin of the people around us and believe that we're exempt from any guilt because we don't practice those things. However, let's look at the trial of Jesus. Remember when He came before Pilate, Matthew chapter 27. Jesus comes before Pilate. He's been arrested. He's been brought in and for questioning. Matthew chapter 7, verse 23. It says, and the governor said, it's talking about Pilate here. It says, and the governor said, why? What evil hath he done? They wanted to crucify him. Jesus, Matthew chapter 27, verse 11. Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, art thou the king of the Jews? And Jesus said unto him, thou sayest. Okay, so he's being questioned here. After questioning him, Pilate finds no fault in him. He attempts to release him. He wants to let him go. I don't find anything wrong with him. He's pretty innocent. He's not done anything. But they cried out that they wanted to release Barabbas instead. When he asked, what should I do with Jesus? They said, let him be crucified. Pilate even tried to change their minds. He tried to persuade them to choose Jesus instead. Oh, Pilate's a pretty good guy, ain't he? Looks like. Matthew chapter 27 and verse 23. And the governor said, why, what evil hath he done? But they cried out the more, saying, let him be crucified. Let him be crucified. So, if we back up and we look at another passage, sometimes we don't get all the whole story from one passage of the Gospels. But in John chapter 19 and verse 10, in the same discourse, but John's Gospel, it says, John 19, verse 10, then saith Pilate unto him, speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee and have power to release thee? So in John chapter 19 and verse 10, we see that Pilate had told Jesus, I have the power to crucify you. He's asking Jesus a question and Jesus doesn't answer him. So he questions him again and Jesus still doesn't answer. Isaiah 53. As a lamb brought to the slaughter, so he openeth not his mouth. Jesus was like a lamb brought to the slaughter, and he didn't open his mouth. He didn't speak up in his defense. And that bothered Pilate, and Pilate said, do you not know who I am? I am the one that can crucify you. Jesus ends up telling him that power comes from God, and you have nothing without it. But back to our lesson, if Pilate had the power to crucify Jesus, why would he release Barabbas and crucify an innocent man? For one, he was a coward. Matthew chapter 27, verses 24 through 26. Matthew 27, verse 24 through 26. It says, when Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, there was an uproar. He took water and he washed his hands before the multitude. He stepped out and he got above. This is a big crowd. The multitude is talking at a big gathering. And he gets this water and he washes his hands in front of them, signifying that I'm clean of this. This is not on me. And he washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. see ye to it. Then answered all the people and said, His blood be on us and on our children. His blood be on us and on our children. Then released he Barabbas unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Now this is a man that just washed his hands of the innocent blood of Jesus. Then he turns around and has him scourged, beaten to within an inch of his life. All these years we've been wrong about accusing Pilate, because here it says he was innocent. Clearly the Jews took full responsibility. Wait, didn't Pilate say he had the power to decide? Yet he still decided to have Jesus crucified. He took full responsibility when he made that decision. He silently allowed the Son of God to be crucified, knowing he was an innocent man and knowing that he had been turned over for envy. Knowing he had been delivered for envy, he released Barabbas instead and silently allowed the Son of God to be crucified. When he said, I am innocent of the blood of this just person, see ye to it, he was basically turning a blind eye to the injustice being perpetuated to our Savior. Now, was he guilty? Absolutely. Absolutely. Who gave the sentence to have Jesus crucified? Ask anybody that studied, ever read their Bible, and they'll tell you that was Pontius Pilate. We all know that the Jews saying, we will take full responsibility, you're off the hook, meant nothing. Pilate was still guilty. They were all guilty. When abortionists say, this doesn't concern you, and our attitude is, well, they'll do what they want to do, who am I to try to stop them? Are we no different than Pilate? Does God look at us and say, yes, you're the only voice? We're no less guilty than Pilate. We need to speak up for the millions of babies being murdered every year at the rate of 4,000 a day. Imagine what would happen if 4,000 mothers came in here with their children one Sunday. That's how many are killed in one day. They can't speak for themselves. And their mothers are the very ones committing their murders. That only leaves us. Because a heartless and callous nation isn't going to speak up to them. The lawyers, the infidels, if you will, they're not going to say anything. That leaves only us. How long can a nation prosper that kills its future generations at the rate of 4,000 a day? If we start off teaching our young people that human life is disposable from inception, what will they do with us when we are old? You think about that. When we're too frail or too fragile to contribute to the machine anymore, what are they going to do with us? It's already talked about. They already talk about, well, eliminate the weak, eliminate the older people. They're just a burden to society. I imagine it'll come in our lifetime. If they don't have a problem killing innocent babies who have their whole lives ahead of them, what's to stop them from killing the elderly whose lives are already lived in their eyes, in their opinion? Perhaps we need to remember that the Lord hates hands that shed innocent blood and ask ourselves, what have I been doing every day while the blood of 4,000 innocent lives are being poured out in the name of choice? I know this isn't a lesson on the gospel, but it is a lesson on Christianity and on the love of God. And all the parents I've ever known, realize and cherish the love that God has showed to them when He blesses them with a child. And this morning, we had a couple of them that got really loud. And the mothers may come apologize or say something, but it doesn't bother me a bit. And as those babies were screaming this morning, I was thinking about this evening's lesson. And I was thinking about how many cries have been stifled by the heartless, ruthless murderers that have killed their babies, some of them halfway out of the womb. If you have any need, the message is yours. Won't you come while together we stand and sing? It's selected.